Hello and welcome to Max Politics. This is Ben Max, coming to you from New York Law School and its Center for New York City Law. Thanks for tuning in for the show. We're speaking here on Monday, April 1st, 2024. It's the first day of the state's new fiscal year, but there's no new state budget yet out of Albany. Instead, Governor Kathy Hochul and the legislature agreed to pass what's known as a budget extender late last week in order to ensure that the state's bills get paid, especially state workers' paychecks. And the Democratic governor and the two Democratic supermajorities in the state Senate and Assembly will continue this week to negotiate what will be a roughly $235 billion spending plan. They will continue negotiations this week, but we don't know exactly when there will be a budget. The governor and the legislature still have plenty to hash out, including all sorts of decisions on taxing and spending and lots of policy as well. If you're a regular listener to this show, you know that very often in the New York State budget, they not only make a lot of funding decisions on revenue and how to spend it, but also they put in a lot of policy as well. But some policy cannot be agreed upon in the budget and gets kicked into the legislative session that will follow and then either does or doesn't get acted on. Then as well, the legislature will be in session until early June this year. It's an election year for all 213 seats in the state legislature, among other offices, of course, at the local, state, and federal levels. But one of the key pieces of state budget negotiations on the policy side is this thorny and essential issue of housing. And again, regular listeners to the show know we've dedicated a lot of time here on Max Politics to talk about housing policies. And so we will see what they are able to get to on the possibility of some sort of grand bargain on a number of potential housing policies in the state budget. We will return to that on other episodes. One of the many topics where there seems to be a good bit of agreement, at least generally speaking, in state budget negotiations, and there's always plenty to hash out in terms of details on big things, is the governor's proposal known as Empire AI. This is what we're focusing on here on the show today. AI, meaning artificial intelligence, whereby computers and other machines replicate a form of human learning, but often at much faster speeds and depending on the certain parameters that they're programmed with, to complete tasks, to solve problems, or at least attempt to solve problems, to offer products for consideration by humans. It's, of course, very often we talk about solving problems and completing tasks as the more positive way of looking at the capabilities of artificial intelligence. There's many concerns about AI and its uses. Though it's been around for decades, there's an especially significant amount happening around artificial intelligence right now. That's partly because of advancements in what's known as ChatGPT, a form of an upgraded sort of AI-powered chatbot that can carry out tasks that's allowed for much more widespread interaction between people and AI, not to mention all of the sort of AI chatbots that have been proliferating and popping up more and more, automated resources from companies and other entities like governments to try to help people find information without needing a human being. Some of that is considered artificial intelligence. Some of it is not. It depends exactly how the programs operate. I'm not going to get into all the details of what is and isn't AI here. I encourage people to do more research if you're more of a layperson like me. But there's a lot of buzz, as all listeners know, about AI use and growth and how it fits into the broader sort of tech ecosystem and the growth of technology, possibilities and pitfalls. And whether we're talking about use of AI in medicine and healthcare or education, business, journalism, there's a lot of discussion about the use of AI in journalism, government, politics, you know, separate from the government side of things, AI use in politics, and much more. And New York wants to get further into the action. So the Empire AI Consortium is Governor Kathy Hochul's proposal to put New York State at or near the forefront of artificial intelligence research, development, and policymaking through a new public-private partnership, mostly public at this point, that would create a state-of-the-art computing center in Buffalo, with participation not only from its planned home at University of Buffalo, which is part of the SUNY system, State University of New York, but also other higher education institutions, including the broader SUNY system, as well as CUNY, Columbia University, NYU, Cornell, Rensselaer Polytech Institute, and industry partners, philanthropic partners, and funders, and a consortium that is very likely to grow quickly. But those are some of the initial main players in this proposed consortium. And the new AI hub, according to Hochul's proposal, which was first released in January as part of her 2024 agenda, would require roughly $400 million in initial funding over the to be used over the course of a number of years. And she's proposed that roughly $250, $275 million of that comes via state funding. And that's part of what she and many others are hoping to have included in the upcoming state budget. That's part of why we're talking about this right now. That state budget, again, is due any day now. And the legislature does appear ready to grant that proposal to Hochul and that funding of somewhere around $250 million in the budget. We can't be quite sure yet exactly how this will play out. There could be ways in which the Empire AI proposal and funding gets leveraged related to other issues. This is what happens in, you know, budget negotiations. But all signs, I would say, point to this funding being in the state budget and Empire AI moving forward. The rest of the funding and resources is set to come from philanthropy and then also some from the higher education institutes and institutions involved, as well as certainly some participation from private industry. Joining me today to discuss Empire AI and where it fits into the broader tech and AI picture is one of the leading voices around technology in New York and is supportive of this proposal, and that's Julie Samuels. She's president and CEO of Tech NYC, a group representing tech companies and the broader tech sector in New York, and focused on sort of not only tech and industry growth in New York, but the broader sort of livability and broader public policy world of New York City and state and beyond. So as part of her 2024 agenda, as I mentioned, and under the sort of banner of economic development and higher education, Hochul unveiled this Empire AI proposal that Julie Samuels will be on in just a minute to discuss with me. The idea, Hochul said, is to both create opportunity in New York and for New Yorkers, including economic activity for businesses, jobs, entrepreneurs, but also to help foster responsible AI research and development, including around public policy, and to create AI opportunities focused on the public good. All of that is key, including those last parts, of course, because AI can be used for all sorts of things, from trying to find cancer cures to helping students learn math or to write papers. And that can go, of course, in a number of directions when you're asking for help writing things that are going to be submitted to your teachers in schools. But also AI can be used for helping build weapon systems, developing cybersecurity or developing cybersecurity threats. You name it, I could go on. There's so many use cases. There's things in development. There's challenges. There's opportunities. And this is just an area of so much opportunity, but also a lot of risk. And that's where public policy can and will come in. But like with anything, questions include, what are the best public policies to create a smart regulatory framework that minimizes harms, but also fosters growth and maximizes opportunities? And it can be especially difficult for government to step in helpfully when technology is moving so quickly. So these are some of the challenges at play here and some of the challenges that Empire AI is going to set out to help solve. According to Hochul's office, quote, access to the computing resources that power AI systems is prohibitively expensive and difficult to obtain. As a result, researchers, public interest organizations, and small companies are being left behind, which has enormous implications for AI safety and society at large. By increasing collaboration between New York State's world-class research institutions, Empire AI will allow for efficiencies of scale not able to be achieved by any single university, empower and attract top-notch faculty, expand educational opportunity, and give rise to a wave of responsible innovation that will strengthen New York's economy and national security. End quote. The University at Buffalo of SUNY, important to note, has a rich history of AI research and development. You can read about that if you'd like. I was doing some research ahead of this, and it was interesting to read about that. And that's a big part of why Hochul picked it as the anchor for this consortium. Not to mention, of course, that she's from the area, but also that Buffalo is the state's second biggest city and other reasons as well. Hochul has also proposed a suite of AI-related bills to regulate its use. For example, requiring disclosure of AI that's used in political campaigns under certain circumstances to establish the crime of unlawful dissemination or publication of a fabricated photographic, videographic, or audio record. As another example, there's more. We're not going to get too much into those in this conversation today, but you can look them up. And when she announced the Empire AI Consortium, Hochul also unveiled a first-of-its-kind policy on AI use by state government agencies from the Office of Information Technology Services. I encourage people to read that. It's a short document. It's very interesting. It's pretty accessible to lay people. So that use policy is also an interesting part of this, and there will be more of those types of policies developed. State legislators are also working on their own regulations, and we'll see what might make it into a state budget deal along with the Empire AI Consortium funding. Very briefly, before I bring on Julie Samuels of Tech NYC to discuss Empire AI, speaking of the state budget and housing negotiations, we are somewhat cautiously optimistic that there will be a state budget by mid-April. And on April 15th, we at the Center for New York City Law are hosting a state budget briefing focused on housing policy featuring New York City Deputy Mayor Maria Torres Springer. I will talk with her one-on-one at New York Law School on the morning of April 15th in front of a live audience. There'll be a little time for audience questions as well at the end, about what's in a state budget, if we have one, on housing policy and how it fits into the city's state agenda and the city's larger plans around housing and the Adams administration's efforts to build a lot more housing in New York City. If there happens to be no state budget by April 15th, we will talk about where negotiations stand and how the city is trying to influence the budget that comes out of Albany on housing policy and more. So join us on the morning of April 15th at New York Law School. The event is free, open to the public, but you do need to register ahead of time. You can find the RSVP link at citylandnyc.org. And in case you missed any recent episodes of the show, they're all in the Max Politics podcast feed. You can listen to any or all of them after this one. Recent guests have included a lot of discussion about state budget issues, including with State Senate Deputy Leader Michael Janaris, Assembly members Catalina Cruz and Brian Cunningham, as well as other members of the state legislature talking about different specific topics. We almost always talk about housing with their guests, and also additional guests, both state budget focused and not. I've been joined in recent weeks and months, for example, by the New York City Health Commissioner, Dr. Ashwin Vasan, and others. So check them all out when you get a chance, but not before you listen to today's episode. And today, Julie Samuels is with me. She is President and CEO of Tech NYC, an organization representing New York's tech companies and industry, which she founded in 2016. Tech NYC is a network of technology leaders representing many of the biggest companies in the world and in New York, as well as companies of other sizes and additional organizations with diverse missions and functions. Tech NYC is, according to some of its materials, working to foster a dynamic, diverse, and creative New York. The organization works with policymakers and business leaders to support a successful technology ecosystem, attract and retain talent, and celebrate New York and the companies that call it home. Tech NYC represents more than 800 New York tech companies. Julie Samuels has a background running tech-focused organizations and in technology entrepreneurship and advocacy, as well as in practicing law and journalism, two things we like here at New York Law School and the Center for New York City Law, and here on the podcast, of course. Among other organizations where she's involved, Julie is also on the board of the Five Borough Institute, the New York public policy think tank that's co-located here at New York Law School. I recently interviewed Five Borough Executive Director Grace Rao here on the show about the organization's latest report focused on childcare policy, so you can check that out. after this one. And Tech NYC is focused on that issue, among others that relate to the present and future of New York City, New York State, and making sure they are places that are thriving, friendly to business, entrepreneurs, workers of all kinds. And of course, there is now technology involved in the work of virtually every business, nonprofit, institution. Tech has obviously become not so much only its own industry or sector, although it obviously is that, but really part of everything. And Julie Samuels of Tech NYC has thoughts on everything, but we won't be asking her about everything here in this conversation. She's here to discuss the Empire AI proposal put forward by Governor Kathy Hochul and others earlier this year that appears to be well on its way to soon securing funding and broader approval via a state budget deal that we're expected sometime in the next couple of weeks out of Albany. So Julie Samuels is here. Julie, hello, welcome. Thank you for-
Hey. Oop, I got ahead of you. Hi, Ben.
That's okay. Hi, how are you?
So we're off to an auspicious start.
Before we dig in on Empire AI itself, let's talk big picture here for a couple minutes. Just zooming out, the broader work you're involved with Tech NYC and strengthening and growing tech in New York, where are we at right now? Capture the moment for us. Obviously, there's been so much growth in tech in New York over the last couple of decades. There's also been challenges and opportunities like the pandemic and other things, upheaval in New York, lots of changes in governmental leadership at the city, state, and federal levels over the last few years, obviously. But where are we at right now in terms of New York and the work that you do at Tech NYC?
Well, I think, you know, first of all, I'm really excited to have this conversation, both about tech more broadly and Empire AI. I think these are really crucial issues to the future of our city and our state. And to answer your question more directly, tech is booming here. And tech is booming in a way that feels, frankly, pretty healthy, especially compared to what we've seen in some other places. You know, tech is integrated into New York in a way that feels productive. So when we first started Tech NYC, as you said, I launched the organization in 2016. It was still unclear, this seems crazy now, but it was still unclear which city was going to be considered basically number two for tech in the US behind the Valley. Boston was doing well, LA was doing really well. And some folks in New York kind of got together and thought it was really important that we really plant our flag, that New York was going to be an international tech hub. Well, that seems almost ridiculous now because tech is clearly at least the second largest tech hub in the United States. And I think soon will be the first, the largest tech hub in the United States and one of the primary international tech hubs internationally, as I said. So, you know, that all feels really good. The kind of anecdote, isn't an anecdote, the way I like to talk about what feels so healthy about tech in New York, and this might be a little bit too cute by half, but it's also true. In San Francisco, in the Valley more broadly, I used to live there, as I think you know, there are a lot of people who are tech workers who live in the Bay. In New York, what we see is we've got a bunch of New Yorkers who work in tech. That distinction, how you define yourself first, really, really feels different here in a good way.
That's interesting. And I think we've certainly seen sort of just an explosion in New York of companies starting, and obviously the ways in which both industry and government have sort of rethought the role of tech. And obviously, as you are sort of getting at, tech jobs have just exploded in New York in a way that, I mean, this was being discussed certainly when Mayor Bloomberg was mayor, but, you know, that has just continued that the diversification That's of right. the city's economy and tax base and all that is very important to the overall health of New York in a very important way in terms of job creation and, you know, not relying necessarily on sort of traditional industries as much, although those are still important, of course, like finance. But that emergence has been really, really significant.
I think that's right. You know, there's well over 20,000 startups, obviously some of the largest tech employer, international tech employers, plus companies of all different sizes. I think one of the dynamics that's also been really interesting to see play out is not only is our startup ecosystem booming, but like I said, a lot of the international tech companies, even the ones that aren't headquartered here, have really doubled down on New York. You especially see that in the commercial real estate sector here. Google just opened this fabulous new building, St. John's Terminal, Amazon redid the old Lord and Taylor building. You're really seeing some of these companies build out iconic New York real estate in a way that really shows that they're here to stay. And I think that's very meaningful as well.
What are some of the keys to continuing the success, or, making sure it has even more staying power, growing it? Are there ways that public policy broadly needs to sort of respond better, differently? There's obviously always these challenges. I mean, I just, I watch some of these hearings at the federal level where you get, tech CEOs brought in front of Congress and the range of questions. There's some legislators, obviously, at all levels of government and their staffs who are better prepared, who do more research, who keep up with things. But you get, you get this range of questions and comments where some people get it and some people clearly don't. And that's obviously a big challenge of your work, is sort of interacting with public policymakers. Where are we at in terms of how, and let's just stick, to New York City and state, or comment on the federal level if you want to, but, where are we at in terms of those interactions and how public policy can sort of better enhance and work with what we're seeing in the development that we've been speaking about?
Well, listen, this is obviously a complicated question, so not to oversimplify, but I do think the answer is pretty straightforward at its core. And tech companies are still, despite what I said about big real estate deals, they're still uniquely mobile. It's easy enough for them to pull up stakes. I don't mean to say they'll just drop on a dime and leave. There's a ton in New York keeping them here. But the tech companies will go where the people they want to hire are, period. So as long as dynamic, smart people who tech companies can hire are here in New York, tech companies will stay here. That means we need to attract the right people to New York, retain the right people in New York, and also, crucially, we need to ensure that we are training New Yorkers to be the tech workforce going forward as well. I think that is thing number one, two, three, and four. And then
Ahead. Just quickly, I was going to say, and that's where obviously, I mentioned very briefly, childcare and mm-hmm. even the description of Tech NYC talking about a thriving New York. It's not, the discussion is not just about so siloed to specific, even business policies, right? It's about childcare.
Right.
It's about housing. I mean, we've seen industry leaders, not just in tech, but across business and in education and elsewhere, focused on things like higher education and housing policy and other things. I mean, even, transportation and congestion pricing and all these mm-hmm. things where, it is about the health of the overall city and region and state in terms of both economic development, but also opportunities for people and just sort of a thriving place to be, where you get that relationship then that sort of works together, right? In terms of people want to be here and the companies want to be here. And then that obviously just, snowballs and continues to build momentum if things are going well. You were going to say something else though.
No, I think that's exactly right. I think that trend was already happening pre-2020. I think COVID really solidified it. It made it clear nationwide that people can move around. But we haven't really seen that in tech in New York. What I'm saying is people moved all over the country during COVID and could work from a whole bunch of places. And I know there's a lot of reporting on people leaving New York mm-hmm. in tech that, with a few exceptions, it really felt like things were going the other way. Mm-hmm. If anything, we felt like we saw a lot of people leaving the West Coast coming here when kind of it opened up more, where you could work from different places more. We've seen, the data is not very clear. We don't have very good data on this, but anyone you talk to will tell you that they've seen, especially at kind of the senior levels, really impressive senior executives, entrepreneurs, CEOs, other C-suite, those people all moved here. For a long time, it felt like if you were in tech, inertia pulled you to the valley. Mm-hmm. That really opened up post 2020, 2021. And all of a sudden, you could have a very robust career in tech across multiple jobs in New York City. And that's so, really, really shifted.
Yeah, that's so interesting because even as you were first introducing that notion, I was going to say, I remember at least reading a couple of articles about how when company, you know, there were some companies, tech companies that basically said, you can work from anywhere you want, you know, permanently, basically. And there were some articles about lots of people moving to New York who their, you know, their company wasn't based in New York, but they wanted to live in New York and they could still work for a tech company based in California or somewhere else. Some of those interesting trend stories that sort of get at what you're pointing at, and we'll be obviously looking and hopeful for better data on on a lot of that. And I also,
let me interrupt one second. I want to say one thing about that, that is part of why I love working in tech in New York so much. Okay. Most of the major industries in New York have been here for a long time. People move here to work in those industries. But most of the people who work in tech in New York at some point made a conscious decision to live in New York that probably had nothing to do with tech. It was probably a personal reason. Maybe their family was here. Maybe they just love the city. Maybe, you know, they wanted to be by certain cultural institutions, whatever, you name it, why like anyone would want to live in New York. Okay. So that means that the tech industry here is largely made up of people who love New York. That's unique. And it's it's actually really awesome. I don't know if that will always be the case, frankly, like as the industry gets much and much bigger, which it seems poised to do. You know, you might end up having people who move here for jobs, but maybe really want to live in the suburbs and commute in. Right now, so much of the industry is really people live in the city. They want to be part of the city. They chose to be here. And that's unique. It's very cool.
What are the biggest threats to all this? I mean, obviously, this is, you know, a lot of what we've talked about broadly speaking are that there's a lot of good trends for tech. There's, you know, New York City has had its challenges, obviously, a significant increase in crime in, you know, the pandemic era. Some of that has abated. There's obviously still challenges around that. Nothing near historic highs, of course, but still a challenge. And you know, that's been obviously discussed by certain leaders across different industries and business leaders about sort of where companies are based, where workers want to be, et cetera. But New York retains so many of the positives that you were just speaking about. Obviously, other challenges include the affordable housing picture and just broader affordability. So, you know, there's big challenges, but also a lot of the, a lot of this positive momentum and opportunity and continued growth. But what are some of the biggest threats? I mean, obviously, not to revisit it, you know, but there was the ways in which some public officials and labor leaders, you know, some, not all, torpedoed the Amazon HQ2 deal. So there's obviously, from where you sit, certain sort of threats to this growth. What are the biggest ones?
Well, I think, you know, what you teed that up with, the biggest threats are, you know, the things I think about in that aren't uniquely related to tech: affordability, safety, good schools, ability to raise a family here, for a workforce that is largely mobile, that does have the resources to go, you know, wherever it wants. So that, I think that's the first thing. And then I think there are a host of kind of more tech-friendly policies that are meaningful. You obviously talked about HQ2. That was a disaster. You know, that was really bad for New York. If Amazon had really doubled down in Long Island City, I think that would have been great for Queens. I think that would have been great for the city. I think that probably would have been really meaningful during the pandemic as well. So that was a real missed opportunity. But the reasons, I think you have to take a step back and think about that moment in time too. The reasons that Amazon originally chose New York, those fundamentals remain the same. Mm-hmm. Companies obviously don't want to be beat up, but, you know, listen, we're having a bunch of debates in Albany around issues that impact tech companies. But by and large, many of those debates, not all, but many have been civil. You know, they've been undertaken in a way that people understand these companies are here. They're employing New Yorkers. They're really building a huge part of the future of our city and state. And so, you know, we'll have policy scuffles, and that's important. But as long as I think they can stay civil, we'll be in a much better situation.
And we won't have time to get into it in this conversation, but part of what you're referring to there, I'm sure, is there's, discussions on bills in Albany related to regulations of social media platforms. And I know you and Tech NYC have thoughts on that. And maybe if we have 2 minutes at the end, we can talk about that. But let's move to Empire AI. So AI more broadly, and then we'll obviously get into the Empire AI. But as we go from tech more broadly into AI more broadly, where are we right now in artificial intelligence and the tech industry? Is there a way that you can sort of capture for people the moment we're at? There's obviously been a lot of growth in AI use, ChatGPT and so forth, becoming much more popularized, and people are interacting much more with chat bots of all kinds and, all that type of stuff. But how would you put it? Sort of big picture broadly where we're at right now. Maybe it's about sort of the possibilities AI holds or the threats that it holds. All of where we're at right now, big picture here.
Yeah, well, listen, the moment we're in, it's not as if something technical changed very quickly. What happened was when OpenAI released ChatGPT, I think what it did was kind of open the imagination for all kinds of people, not just the engineers who've been working on this technology. So, if you were thinking about it like a graph, we're still going up and to the right, kind of, at the same pace we were before. But I think to most people, including most politicians and elected officials and policymakers, something kind of broke open last year, right? And it was that these tools really got put in the hands of everyday people. In a way that people can understand. And that has just completely changed the dynamic. It's changed the business climate. It's changed the investment climate. It's just blown everything wide open. So it has accelerated it, but that's because there's so much external attention being paid. But I think one thing that is important for people to understand is that the development of these technologies, the large language models, other machine learning technologies, has actually been underway for a long time. So I think
I'm a layperson, and I'm always sort of chatting with people. And when this comes up, I sort of have to remind myself, and maybe the people I'm chatting with, if they're also not experts in this area, that this has been developing for decades. And even just researching as for this conversation as part of the Empire AI announcement, just even looking back at why SUNY Buffalo, is in part chosen because it has its own history with AI research and has they say a couple of hundred people working on AI, related research and matters at Buffalo. And so, this has been ongoing, but I think to your point, the sort of emergence of ChatGPT really took this into a whole new level. And also, I don't know if this, fully is, I don't know if this qualifies exactly as machine learning and artificial intelligence, but also the way, people have the devices in their homes where they're talking to their, Alexas, or they're talking, they have their smart devices of all kinds. And we're just, we've been getting sort of more and more into this mode of like interactions with smart machines, right?
I mean, listen, I think that what you're getting at, and I don't want to like get into too esoteric of a conversation, so just interrupt me, but this isn't just I think what you're saying is exactly right. This is not just about AI. It's not just about large language models. We are living in a moment of great technological change. This is the kind of thing that happens like once a century. It is unique. It is fascinating. And it's going to be hard and complicated. We are upending huge swaths of the way, quite frankly, our society works, our economies work. And it's messy and it's exciting. And also, we're not going to be able to stop it. So, I mean, that's part of why I love my job, actually, because these questions are interesting and they're meaty, and we live in such fascinating times. But I'm not going to pretend the answers are easy. And I'm not going to pretend that the genie can somehow, go back in the bottle. But I'm also not going to pretend that we're going to just tomorrow, it's all going to be rainbows and flowers and technology is going to solve every single problem. It's not there. It's all kinds of somewhere in between, you know?
Right. And as you're getting at, I mean, every time we've seen major technological revolutions, it is messy and there are challenges and there are pitfalls and there are threats and there, you know, needs to be responsible development by industry. There needs to be good public policy that both sort of encourages growth and, you know, responsible development, but also tries to, you know, control the threats and mitigate damages. But, you know, there's ways that that can go in a lot of different directions. So, you know, there's certainly people out there who are very concerned about AI, right? Who are very, you know, sort of worried about, as you know, you say, can't put the genie back in the bottle, you know, are worried about sort of this becoming, I mean, even this becoming, you know, the biggest sort of threat of the way technology could get out of control or out of our hands, and the ability for humans to sort of, like, you know, rein in machine learning so that the, you know, machines don't make catastrophic mistakes and so forth. So where are we at right now in that discussion? And, you know, it's just so interesting hearing you say that and all the recognition that you bring to these discussions, because certainly from your perspective, you don't want government putting too many, you know, sort of parameters and handcuffs on technological innovation, but you also recognize that there is mess to it, there are threats to it, et cetera. So where are we at right now? Where are we at in those conversations, particular to AI?
Well, I think Empire AI is actually at the core of that. So
yeah, go for it.
Let me just kind of dive in here. So, okay, to talk very specifically about AI, one of the biggest challenges right now is that you need computer processing, huge, huge amounts of computer processing to build these systems, to run these systems, to just use these systems to run other types of experiments. It's why NVIDIA is like such an enormous company and has grown so much, because they produce the computer chips that anyone needs to use these systems. They're impossible to get. That's part of why the investment market's going so crazy. People are on long wait lists, companies are on long wait lists, and they're outrageously expensive. So what that means is, frankly, the largest tech companies have a ton of computing power. Some smaller startups work with large companies to get access to their power, their computing power. But the universities and a lot of the public sector has, frankly, just because of the economics, been left behind. And that's a problem because of all of the things we were just talking about, because of so many of the interesting, messy problems we face as a society, we really, really need to incentivize our universities, our professors, our researchers to use these tools, because they don't have the same profit motive that the companies have. Now, listen, I run Tech NYC. I think, you know, I work with these companies all the time. I think that they should be doing all the development they're doing in the AI space, but they all have profit motives. You know, they're companies. They are mostly publicly traded companies. They've got all kinds of economic pressures and incentives. As a society, and I'm so proud that New York is out front on this, we are the first. What we are doing, you know, with Empire AI is giving the universities access to the same type of computing power, so they too can, you know, again, do the research that we're talking about, build, not just build the AI tools, but, you know, maybe it's climate research, maybe it's using AI to make medical discoveries, like, you name it. But you want to create space for people to be able to use these powerful tools without the same profit incentives that the companies have. So that's I think kind of where we're at here. It's really based on the cost of computing. And that's why Empire AI is so important, because it's pooling the resources across these schools with the state to empower them. And it's amazing. No one else is doing that.
And what do you think about the decision to headquarter in Buffalo? Because obviously when we have the tech growth in New York City, I mean, I know you're not going to say it's a terrible decision, but.
no, I actually, it's important. I mean, there's a couple important pieces here. One is I think that, frankly, one of the most important reasons that we should be thinking about is you can use hydropower in Buffalo. Oh, these computers, they take a lot of electricity. Sure. You would not want this kind of supercomputer in New York City or any of the suburbs. It would be very expensive to power it and cool it. You want it to be somewhere where you have access to green energy, cheap green energy. And, you know, Buffalo's got that in spades. Mm. So I'm actually really glad about that.
That's a good one. I haven't heard come up yet. Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, and by the way, I mean, just to be clear, the six partners institutions right now are Cornell, Columbia, NYU, RPI, CUNY, and SUNY. Obviously, there's a lot happening in the city. Obviously, NYU and Columbia are here. Cornell Tech is here. CUNY, obviously, here. They will all be able to access that computing power from the city. It's not like they have to go to Buffalo to use it.
I was going to actually ask you about that. Yeah. I was going to say, I mean, there's going to be a lot that's not just done in Buffalo here, right? I mean,
oh, yeah, it'll be done from here. Yeah, you know, there's fiber, you know, we're able to access computers remotely. Mm-hmm. It's all great. I mean, it's great for Buffalo that will be there. There will be people there because of it, but it's, you know, good all around.
Oh, listen, I mean, listen, A, fantastic for Buffalo. B, that's good for the state. I mean, it's, you know, the second largest city in the state. It's good to, again, you know, in part diversify where resources are across the state. So, you know, I mean, I'm not in any way saying it shouldn't be in Buffalo. I'm just saying when you
talk
about.
Don't worry. We won't tell the governor you said that about Buffalo.
but, you know.
No, I mean, listen, there's like, if you take a step back too and place this in kind of some other tech-related activities that are happening statewide, like Micron in Syracuse, all the stuff with semiconductors outside of Albany. Like, this is really great for New York State. Right. New York State is really booming in the city with the companies and increasingly booming upstate with a lot of infrastructure for tech to run. And that's amazing for New York. You know, that's thanks to, obviously, we're talking here about the governor's foresight here, but goes without saying that Senator Schumer has been instrumental in that as well. So we're very lucky in New York.
Yeah, no, I was going to ask you about that in terms of, you know, we have this moment, even though there's, you know, all sorts of challenges at different levels of government with getting policy passed or certain funding for different things and whatnot. You know, we've also been at this interesting moment where clearly there's, you know, a recognition about the ways in which governments at different levels, philanthropy, private sector, you know, can work together in different ways, and government can leverage certain tax incentives in, you know, in not necessarily new and different ways, but just, you know, thinking about them across, you know, different industries and so forth, and trying to foster development. And we've seen, you know, we've seen a good bit of that. And it's obvious that whether it's Empire AI or some of these other examples you mentioned, that, you know, institutions very often of higher education are involved and are attached. And so maybe say a little bit more about sort of industry and higher education and how Empire AI, you know, how do you foresee industry leaders being involved? I mean, obviously they will be involved, and they've been part of this discussion. The governor's announced, what's it called? A task force or a emerging technology advisory board, you know, that's bringing in leaders from industry and nonprofits and elsewhere. But I imagine that one of the biggest keys, and I think you got at this a little bit earlier, but one of the biggest keys here about making this all work is how industry and higher education are working together to not only foster innovation and opportunity, but also sort of the workforce pipeline as well.
Yep. Well, first, let me say, you brought up philanthropy as part of that. And I just want to start by saying there's a huge philanthropic element to Empire AI as well. Bloomberg LP co-founder Tom Secunda, the Simons Foundation, they've all helped catalyze this. And it's, I'm very grateful that they were able to see the opportunity and help kind of put the pieces together. Tom is who sat down with the governor and gave her the idea. And I'm also really grateful that the governor understood what Tom was talking about and saw it right away. And that's kind of how the whole idea got spun up. So that's been a huge piece of this. As far as industry partnering here more directly, I'll actually say that this long term will be great for industry, but in the near term, this is not about industry. But here at Tech NYC, most, if not all of our members understand that in order to build a successful ecosystem, successful tech ecosystem in New York, you kind of need to be, you know, firing on all cylinders, if you will. Mm-hmm. And that means that you need to be attracting the best academic talent, the next generation of academic talent. You need to be developing these technologies here. And then if you've got the best professors, then, you know, then you bring really interesting students, postdocs to work under them, to work on these systems. Those people, they stay here, hopefully. They have families here, they start companies here, they go work at existing companies here, and you kind of get this flywheel effect, mm-hmm. where you have the education system, you have the academy, you have the private sector, and you have New Yorkers kind of all working together. You have all the pieces coming together, and that's really meaningful. I don't want to compare us to other places too much, but I think this does a good way of explaining why this is so important. And if you think what over the past two decades Stanford has meant for the Valley, mm-hmm. that to me is what Empire AI can mean for New York, will mean for New York. Yeah. That you really kind of create a center of gravity and all this stuff builds up around it. All this economic activity, private sector growth builds around that center of gravity.
When we, you mentioned, you know, some interesting pieces of, you know, obviously AI, machine learning is potentially unlocking possibilities in unlimited possibilities, and you name it across problems that, you know, we're seeking to solve as a society, whether it's, you know, trying to find cures for diseases, or it's, you know, helping children with their learning and all sorts of things. You mentioned climate. Are there any interesting things? I'm just curious if there's sort of like in the many, many conversations you have about AI and development and Empire AI, are there any interesting sort of like potential use cases or things that need more research and development that have sort of come across your radar that are sort of not always talked about? So that's one part of the question. Then the other part is, what are the pieces of this that you hear the most concerns about, even from people that might be AI, you know, boosters and know and see the future and the possibilities? There's obviously concerns among many people about, you know, when AI capabilities are used for the wrong thing, or when machine learning goes too far, or there's mistakes or whatever. So on the sort of possibility side, any other interesting things to note? And on the concern side, you know, sort of what do you hear most?
Yeah, let me actually start with the concern side, sure. and because there's so many amazing examples on the other side. And the concern side, listen, there are obviously very real concerns that we should be super attentive to when it comes to deploying new technologies like AI. You know, things about bias, things about disinformation, misinformation, you name it. But this is exactly why we have to empower the universities, because those are the folks who are going to do, the academics are the folks who are going to do the types of research that address those concerns. Empire AI to me is like exactly the reason, some of the challenges is exactly the reason why we need Empire AI. Mm-hmm. Again, right. I don't fault the point. Companies. I mean, right, I'm not saying right, the companies are bad. I'm just saying the companies have a different set of incentives.
Right. I was going to say, this gets back to your point about for-profit companies and why it's so important to bring in institutions of higher education and government. And of course, this is where a lot of the more sort of, but I mean, companies also have to be very careful, right? They, I mean, these are areas where liability, you know, you can get into all huge issues of liability. I mean, that's obviously true across all sorts of technologies, but you know, that's an interesting piece of discussion as well. Sorry, I interrupted.
Yeah, no, I guess, you know, government can't, and we could do hours on how government can and should regulate AI. And we, you know, Senator Schumer has been leading the charge on that in DC. And that's a super important question, but we can't just wait for government. I mean, obviously, you talked about a lot of the hearings we've seen in DC. Our government is not going to figure, no government, frankly, is going to figure this out quickly enough. We need to kind of have all legs of the stool. Sorry, that was a weird analogy, but you know, you're going to have, again, the academics, the researchers, alongside some regulation, alongside the private sector, to really kind of figure out some of these thorny questions. But I also, you know, to get to your first question, I'm incredibly optimistic. Here's the thing, without sounding corny, like, you can use these AI tools to address almost any type of problem. And the researchers, the academics who are deep in their fields and things I will frankly never fully understand, they can use computing power, like will be available at Empire AI, to just address and dig in on enormous problems. You know, people keep talking about finding cures for cancer, and they talk about it so much that I fear it's starting to sound like a tagline. But that is exactly the kind of thing that AI can develop, helping identify new drugs, new therapies, understanding climate models in a whole new way. The kind of computing power we're talking about is just immense. It's immense. And right now, most researchers just don't have access to that. So those are, you know, a lot of the areas we're really excited about. Understand, you know, really getting to understand how these thorny issues work and finding solutions for some of the hardest questions we kind of face as humans. There's also really cool stuff. Art and AI, there's a lot of interesting things happening there. Columbia is doing a lot there. Cornell really has been focusing, they've got a great department that focuses on climate research, agricultural, which crosses over with a lot happening in the agricultural space, understanding better how we can produce more better food, more safely and productively for the environment. You know, these are like really big society-wide issues. And again, we're not talking about just empowering computer scientists. I want to be really clear. Empire AI is not just about building AI. It's about academics and researchers using AI, using computing power to do their research in whatever field it is that they study.
I was reading the governor in part in putting out the Empire AI plan, also released from the Office of Information Technology Services, the sort of state's first use of AI policy for state agencies under the governor's purview. And, you know, it struck me in reading it that, you know, again, as a layperson, a lot of it made sense in terms of some of the safeguards and whatnot that they're trying to put in place, and how, you know, there needs to be human oversight of the AI systems and tools. There have to be safeguards against bias, you know, which obviously can be extremely tricky to, you know, sort of produce those and have oversight of those and test those and all that, you know, risk management and so forth. So I guess one of the biggest questions, and I'll let you go very soon here, is, you know, how does sort of how that's all going to be balanced in your mind, where you know, one of the things I wonder about this as we see where it's heading and we hear folks in government talk about regulations, is that you know, something's going to happen, or people are going to be so concerned that they are going to regulate to a point that it takes immense resources to sort of manage the regulations. And then you get into these really challenging situations where, like in government, where the risk assessment is so big, because in government, you know, they don't want to make big mistakes around, you know, emerging technologies, and the liability is huge and all of that. You know, the political ramifications can be huge, where, you know, companies much more often can build that into their business models, right? They know that some products are going to fail. They know there's going to be some litigation, et cetera, you know, insurance and so forth. So how is this going to work well in terms of the so much government involvement and, you know, institutions of higher education with Empire AI? I know a lot of the policies are going to come out of this, as you've been saying, but Are we going to be able to find the balance, the right balance, and be able to take advantage in good ways while people need to understand that there is, you know, some risk involved?
I mean, I think that's kind of the key question. And I think it's, I hope so. I'm optimistic that we will. I mean, listen, I think, you know, I, in general, try and see this. I don't want to use the term techno-optimist. That's got a whole bunch of baggage now, but I do think it would be a real shame if governments weren't able to find ways to use technology to make government work better for its citizens. Luckily, both our governor and our mayor are open to that. There needs to be real oversight, particularly when you're talking about government services. But I hope that we're able, that balance, I fundamentally believe that balance is findable. And that, again, not to sound like a broken record, is why it's so important that we're empowering and incentivizing nonprofit research institutions here, kind of to get at a lot of those questions. The city and the state have both put out AI guidelines that I think are really useful and helpful in thinking about how government would implement some of these tools. But as anyone who has interacted with any government service, whether it's the DMV or the IRS, like obviously there are things we can use technology for to make that more painless, to make it work better for more people. And that is, to me, like the opportunity here in all of this. And that's also, you know, another thing I wanted to talk about with regard to Empire AI and placing it here in New York. In particular, listen, if we didn't build Empire AI here, it's going to be a $400 million, $450 million supercomputer. If it doesn't get placed here, it's going to be somewhere else. It's going to be in another state. Mm-hmm. And here in New York,
and there
we
might
do
be models
have,
in other states, you know.
I hope one day there are, by the way. Yeah, right. We're optimistic that this is kind of something that will be
trendsetting. Yeah.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. We really are first here. But we have real oversight here. We have environmental regulations. We have, again, state policies thinking about how you implement these types of technologies. Like, I'd rather be having these conversations here where the legislators are paying attention, are thinking about people's civil rights, civil liberties, you know, are thinking about individuals' rights, like, are thinking about bias. Like, I'd rather us roll up our sleeves here in New York, where some of these questions are at the forefront, as opposed to somewhere else. You know, one other thing that I was just thinking about when we were talking about Empire AI being first in the nation that might be helpful. I maybe should have said this at the beginning of our conversation, not at the end, but this is a first in the nation thing we're talking about here. But the model, the idea of a bunch of universities pooling together resources to share high power scientific equipment actually isn't new. It's what, for instance, schools do with high powered telescopes. Like, this is a kind of the idea that schools would have to come together is not entirely new, but there's two other quick points I want to make that I think are really important talking about Empire AI. Number one, even the private institutions, even Cornell, Columbia, NYU, RPI could not afford to do this on their own. That's a very important piece of this. Probably no private academic institution in the country could build up this kind of supercomputer in this short order on its own. Number one. Number two, it's been amazing to see the schools come together so quickly. They, you know, as soon as these conversations started happening at the end of last year, it was obvious to them. They were all like, yes, we want that. And that's been really affirming. I'm confident that more schools will be able to come into this consortium once we're on the other side of the budget. I think, you know, if anything, it's only going to expand. There are a lot of schools in New York who should be part of it. You can even imagine it maybe one day being regional, other states spinning up their own Empire AIs. You know, it's all really exciting.
Well, good. Well, I think those are good closing thoughts.
Great.
Julie Samuels of Tech NYC, thank you for chatting about tech and AI and Empire AI. And obviously, we're speaking here on Monday, April 1st, and things can, you know, move fast when they finally
move
to Albany.
I hope.
So,
what do you think? When will this come out? Will the budget be done? What's your take on that? Your take, Ben.
This podcast will definitely be out before the budget. But I think, you know, I don't they did a budget extender to get through this, you know, most of this week, to get through this week. But I think they're going to need one more probably, and we'll probably wrap by the middle of April is my sort of forecast where I've been at. So that's what I think.
All right. I
But
won't
we'll
hold you
see.
to it.
It
Or maybe
depends, you
I
know,
will. Yeah.
it depends. The housing conversations, I think, will be determinative of exactly how long this takes and whether they're able to get to a real housing deal or they decide they need to kick it out of the budget, which, you know, gets us into a whole nother thorny set of issues that we won't go into now. But
well, I will be reading all of your tweets about it in real time.
Thanks. Thank you for the time, Julie Samuels,
Thank
Tech
you.
NYC. Appreciate it.
Anytime.